The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
I can't even believe this, but I can. I'm overjoyed at the people who write in or let me know that you listen or watch the show. This is just huge. Every letter that I get, it's the most humbling, coolest, most badass experience because I really do try to deliver some content that's entertaining, but educational. I wanted to have the most spectacular, charismatic guess that I possibly could, and I've been thinking about this person for a long, long time. Now, this is a long time friend of, we were trying to figure it out on the podcast, like maybe 15 or so years. This is my friend and entertainment lawyer, Mr. Wayne Helper. He's a huge deal. He has been in charge of the biggest superstars in the business. He has worked for the biggest record labels in history, and well, I recorded this after the podcast because I wanted to kind of see what did we talk about before I did his fanfare and entry in. And the podcast just went not a much different way than I expected, but it really, it's jam-packed with just like a ton of amazing lessons. Only somebody with this kind of wisdom and with what he's seen in his lifetime could give you. So I want you to enjoy this golden 100 centennial Goldie's Closet. And I want to say a really special thanks to Vince Russo, who took a chance on me with a bucket full of chicken necks, reached out, said, do you want to be my Robin on Stern sort of thing? You know, bro, I appreciate him taking a chance on me. I am honored that he would allow me to come into your homes and get to know so many of you on the brand like I have over the years. And it's just been the biggest deal to me ever. So that's my humble thank you. And without further ado, let's give a warm Realm Network welcome. Russo's brand family. Welcome to my friend, Mr. Wayne freaking Helper.
Yay.
Oh my God.
Do you need me to get dressed up and put a suit on?
Shit. Only you. I was just getting ready to do your fanfare. I can't believe this is my 100th show and that anybody even gives a shit. Well, back it up. Let's see. Where are you? Are you at your home office?
I'm in my home office, back in my the corner isolated area of my home.
So everybody, this is Wayne Helper, and he's just a legend in his own time, mind, car, name it. Doesn't matter where Wayne Helper is. And Wayne, I don't even know your story, and we'll just like quick give it a little synopsis of who you are and what you do. And then this is kind of a guilty pleasure for me because all these years I've known you, I don't know, you know, where you hail from and how you got into everything. And I see these crazy pictures of you from back in the day running around with the Grateful Dead. And I know you've been married forever, but I don't know how it all began. So just tell everybody like who you are and what you do and what, you know, quick. The Reader's Digest version of it.
Okay, first off, you know me better. There's no such thing as a Reader's Digest version. So I'm either going to do it. That's right. So that's number one. I was born a poor, white, young Jewish boy in New York City.
I my Christmas shit up just because I knew I was going to have a Jew on the episode.
You know what? Typical middle-class New York City upbringing in the 50s and 60s, born 1953, second-generation American. Parents were obviously survivors of the Depression, World War II, and that gave one a different kind of mindset growing up, especially in New York at the time, which was, dare I say, in the 50s and 60s, very heavily Jewish.
Don't you think it still is?
Not so much. No, I think it's much more diverse. Actually, the district where I grew up, Jackson Heights, Queens, although I lived in every borough, was probably 70-75% Jewish at the time. Now it's a mixture of Colombian, Indian, Middle Eastern, Asian. It actually is the district that AOC represents. So ironically, not ironically, that's just what it is. Music was always in my life.
Okay.
I'll use the word forced, for lack of a better word, to take piano lessons as a young lad, ostensibly so that when my parents had visitors over to the house, it was like, Wayne, perform! Wayne, perform! Wayne, perform!
And was that just your parents, or was that every Jewish kid's?
I think it's every Jewish kid's, but my parents were the textbook example. But I'll say this, I was so good that when I was 6 years old, I performed at Carnegie Hall. So
I didn't know this at all. See, I didn't know this.
Well, there are certain secrets I have to keep from you, Goldie. There's only so much you can be in love with me about. If I shared everything, you would be impossible. You'd be all over.
Oh my God. So you're 6 years old at Carnegie Flippin' Hall?
I probably can share the picture at some point, but I'll get you a copy of it. Music always in my life. I went to high school 5 blocks from the Fillmore East. So my junior and senior year of high school, I was at concerts every Saturday night, late show. And it would be things like B.B. King, The Who, and The Airplane on one bill. It would be Led Zeppelin, Allman Brothers, and Country Joe and the Fish. But every weekend, I was going to concerts. Made my way to college up in Albany, New York, and became the program director of my school radio station.
Okay, here we go. Now we're getting in. I love hearing the backstory of, because you got into it as deep as you can possibly get it. And here we are, kid playing piano, performing, got the bug, and now you're programming. Okay, I didn't know this either.
You know, and I'm the kid with, I evolved from the AM radio with the transistor radio under the bed and the blanket to FM rock, the classic stuff that we all know and now love from 67 to 94. After I graduated, I'm giving you the short version. After I graduated college, didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. Drove a UPS truck from Boston down to Philadelphia. So I just had a great time. Would get to work at 3 a.m. I'd be done by noon. It was fantastic. Go to shows every night.
Oh, okay.
Ultimately, in a very good Jewish motherly kind of way, Audie, I can get you into law school. I have a connection. Don't you want to go? And after a couple of years of getting the grief from my loving mother, I said, sure. So I went to law school not knowing why I was going to law school. At that point, I was living in the East Village. My law school was in the Village. And I was able to become friends with the most important person at every club. And those clubs being the Bottom Line, Max's Kansas City, CBGB's, Hurrah's, Peppermint Lounge. I could name it. And the most important person, do you know who that is, Goldie?
No. Who is it? Wait.
The most important person is the guy who stands out front with the clipboard that says, this is the guest list, and okay, lets you in for free.
Okay. All right. I was going to say something like the bouncer or...
Yeah, exactly. So you work it. So I became friends with all the right people. Ultimately, I wound up living in a brownstone in the East Village with the people who ran, managed, booked the Lone Star Cafe, which was the only country music venue in New York in the late 70s. So I became the go-to guy when country music artists came to New York.
Oh, you, go ahead.
They felt they needed a little lawyer.
Mm.
So from the Bellamy Brothers to Roy Clark to Johnny Paycheck to Don Williams, ultimately leading me to a relationship with the Oak Ridge Boys.
How was the guy with the clipboard? So he was just kind of letting you know who's on the clipboard?
The guy with the clipboard was the guy you would walk up to and say, oh, hello, my name is Wayne Halper, and I'm on the guest list. And he'd let you into sold-out shows for free.
Oh, and then you would you go network with these people, or did you have third-party credibility saying you need to hire Wayne as your entertainment lawyer?
Well, on the one hand, the clubs I was going to, I was networking because networking is Wayne Halper and Goldie's middle name. But in terms of the Lone Star, the country music, it was just a relationship. It was these people knew me and they helped get me into the business.
God, I just love it. There's always that thing, that catalyst that gets you. And you know what's crazy? Everybody, we want to thank everybody at the Realm Network for listening. Everybody at Russo's Brand, we want to thank our patrons for listening, and especially if you're watching and paying for that. Wayne is probably one of the most influential people in my career. Like, Wayne has done so much for me and opened so many doors for me. Now, you've opened a lot of doors, and then it's been up to me to do some freaking hustling. But you have done a lot, and you've introduced me to some assholes and some creeps too, and I've learned great stories, don't even name any names. But you really have just done so much for me. And something that I want to touch on with everybody is loyalty. And you know, your generation, I'm a little younger than you, and then right under me, it's like there's very big on, and I think most people listening, we're all kind of the same demo. Loyalty is so important. And then you get like underneath me, and it's like a lot of these kids, I don't know what it is, but I don't think they know what loyalty is, or they're just so quick to jump ship on anything or to support. It's weird. So, you know, I'm not dissing. I'm just saying, like, I notice a jump, like, right around 30 down. I guess it's millennials, that they don't quite understand, like, how important, like, good, solid relationships and friendships are. Maybe it's the swipe left, Wayne. Just swipe, cancel out, like, you don't quite believe everything I do or think the way I do. So, but you know, in my generation is just like, if you find a friend, especially like you or somebody that just has your back, like I would go to the end of the earth and back for you. And you've already done that for me in so many ways. So I love hearing that. So it was the people at Lone Star that were kind of your.
Well, oh yeah. And it helped me out. But let me, if I could, I'll just finish because I love talking about me.
Yeah, let's do it.
While I'm doing all that country stuff, I'm also managing Grace Jones. I'm involved with Rick James, and I'm Tina Marie's lawyer. So I'm doing all this R&B stuff. So one weekend I'm out on the road with Rick James and Tina Marie. The next weekend I'm out on the road with the Oak Ridge Boys. Ultimately, the Oak Ridge Boys say if you move to Nashville, you could manage us. I moved down here. I managed them for a year.
What?
Yeah.
I know that.
I know. Goldie, you're on a need-to-know basis. So
I didn't know this.
And then I started a business management firm. I went to work at a management company, and we managed Jason and the Scorchers, the Georgia Satellites, John Hyatt, Steve Forbert. And in 1989, I became the first lawyer in-house at a major record label in Nashville. So I started at Capitol Records when Garth Brooks was at 50,000 records, and I left after he had sold 88 million records.
Holy shit.
And then ultimately I came on to be general manager of DreamWorks Records for a decade and what have you. Getting back to what you were saying about loyalty, the key of it all is something that's sorely lacking, and that is honesty and communication. And the generations beyond you do not know how to communicate. They don't not know how to connect. How many times a day do I get a text from somebody saying, are you available for a call? Just freaking call me. The worst that happens is it goes to the damn voicemail, or I'll call you back, or I'll take your call. But you don't need to pre-set up a call by an email or a text. So this generation, and my kids are a little bit part of it, are reluctant to communicate. And it's only through communication and eye contact and interacting with people that you get to know who they are and get into their heart and get into their soul. Have you and I ever talked about your music?
My music?
Yeah. Not really.
No. I didn't want to answer incorrectly, but I don't.
No, there's no incorrect.
I don't really have to. I mean,
we are not connected so much because of your art. We're not really connected that way. We are connected the same way I am with the people I work with because we trust each other, we like each other, we respect each other. We can be honest and open and communicate with each other. I don't have to pull punches with you. I can shoot straight. You're not going to shoot the messenger.
I would rather somebody just shoot straight. Like I go to my guys sometimes and like, I don't think they could handle, I know they can't. They can't handle the stuff that I see about them that I have to quickly delete because they say to me when it happens to me, cause I just get hit, fire, fire, fire. And everybody knows it watching this. They get it. Especially, you know, wrestling and all that. Like I get hit so hard and I go to say something and they will say, well, just let it roll off your back. And I'm like, oh, it's just easy. You have no, like, I'm pretty good with letting a few things roll off my back. When it's like 10, 20 in one night, it's like, I'm human. And I think of other people that they can't take it. And I would much rather somebody just come up to me and say, hey, you hurt my feelings when you did this. And just don't do it again. And then I'll ask, what did I do? I'm not going to get defensive and go, well, how dare you? I'm going to be like, oh, wait, what did I do? Did I make a sound or did I look at you wrong? Or when you said this and you embarrassed me, oh, you're right. I did. I'm sorry. And you're exactly the same way. Like you freaking own stuff. Like you hold yourself accountable. You self-correct. And I don't know where that's gone. I think people are afraid. I think the younger ones are, they don't like any confrontation. They just want a ghost. They don't want to think about it. You know,
and I don't look for new clients anymore. You know that. I don't need business. I don't want it. I have enough going on. And the way that I'm turning my phone off, and the way I live with my relationships, it's 24-hour-a-day access anyway. But when I am dealing with somebody, my closing line is always the same. I promise you two things. Guarantee you two things. Number one, I don't know all the answers. And number two, I'm going to make mistakes. So number one, if I don't know the answer, I'm not going to tell you what I think you want to hear. But give me 3 hours. I'll have a doctorate in the subject. I'll know more about it than anybody else. But I'm not going to tell you what I think you want to hear right now. And number two, if I make a mistake because I'm human, we're all human, I'm not going to make up a lie. I'm going to tell you, hey, Goldie, I screwed up here. Yeah. And let's figure out how to deal with it. Because you know what? If you're going to fire me, you're going to fire me. But it's not about that. It's about doing the freaking right thing. So how do we deal with somebody on the team making a mistake? And how do we react to it collectively? Because if anybody thinks that any member of the team has malicious intent, is acting in bad faith, is intentionally doing things to make mistakes, well, their ass should be out of here anyway. But I've hopefully established the safety of the relationship and the pureness of it, that I'm just speaking from my heart. And you know what? I screwed up. Now, of course, I can't tell you the last time I screwed up because I am perfect. But if I did, that's really it. Accept responsibility and acknowledge you don't know everything. And isn't life so much easier that way?
Well, yeah, your mantra lets people know right off the... So Wayne Helper's always been Wayne Helper, or when did you start getting confident? Or let's go back to the transistor radio gimmick, the AM thing, and then all of a sudden, like, you said you got to be friends with the person with the clipboard, and then you get in with... So let's go to Lone Star. What was your first aha moment? Like, holy crap, I'm dealing with this person. Or like, this is my, who was that?
March, May 15th, 1981.
Okay.
My doorbell rings. My apartment was 10th Street and 4th Avenue. And the person who rang the bell happened to be a booking agent for a major country booking agency.
Oh, I love it.
And he says, hey, Wayne, I'm down here with, I'll mention the name in a second, with so-and-so. We're going over to the Ritz. That was the name of the club.
The Ritz.
Around the corner from my house. I'm going over to the Ritz. You want to join us? And I said, well, I don't know who the hell that is you're with, but why don't you come up to my apartment and we will, what's the word in 1981? We will.
Hang? No.
Medicate appropriately.
Oh, shit. So,
and that's liquor, of course. Nothing illegal.
Okay.
Now that happened to be William Lee Golden from the Oak Ridge Boys. They come up to the apartment, and as we get to know each other, I give him an album. I give him an album. I say, I think you might like this. And the album was by an artist, David, El Rayo X, David Lindley, who was the steel player for Jackson Browne. William Lee took the album, and the next day he calls me, and he says, well, what are you doing with this guy? How are you involved? This is the greatest thing I've ever heard. I said, I'm not involved. I'm just a fan of music. From that point forward, I have been William Lee Golden's attorney and involved with him, and parlayed that into working for the Oaks, coming down to Nashville, changing my life completely. Could it have happened otherwise? Sure. Could it have happened at a different time and in a different way? Of course. But that was the impetus that got me to come down to Nashville for 1 week. I came down to Nashville for 1 week a month over a 3-year period before I moved down here. And I kept my mouth shut. All that I did was listen to Francis Preston, to Connie Bradley, to all the people who were running the business. And they welcomed me because I was involved with the biggest country artist at the time, the Oak Ridge Boys, Elvira. They were huge. I kept my mouth shut where everybody else, oh, you're not doing it right. Oh, I know all the answers. Oh, you're all crazy. Oh, you're hillbillies. Shut your mouth, Halper. Just observe and listen. And when the opportunity presents itself, you offer a suggestion, not like you know it's the perfect solution, but hey, I'm going to take a risk here. I want to throw something out. You may think it's crazy, but it may work. And you know what? For every idea you throw out that doesn't work, it always leads to 10 that do. So eventually, what I'm saying is, after building up the confidence and the respect and the trust, I started taking the risk of opening my mouth and saying, hey, here are some ideas that I have. What do you think about this? And they were always welcome. They were always treated. I was always treated with respect. And anything I did offered was filleted and analyzed, and it wound up coming to some resolution or to some action plan that really helped me further my career. Let's put it that way. It just turned out to be a great thing. You choose your battles. You figure out when to open your mouth. You don't come off like you know it all. You offer things in a gee, I'd like you to consider this. It may be crazy.
You just don't.
What's that?
Humility.
That very well said. Humility, empathy, not looking down on the Southern hillbillies like everybody from New York and L.A. was. You integrate with your people that you want to work with. You gain their trust and their respect. So it just kind of evolved to the point of, shit, becoming the first in-house lawyer at a major record company. And all of a sudden, I'm dealing with Garth Brooks over a 7-year period on a day-to-day basis. So it was pretty damn cool. I was very lucky.
What did you learn from, because you still are dealing with William Lee, I love to hear, what lesson have you learned from him by working with him? Like, if I was to, because I mean, if somebody asked me, what lesson have you learned with Wayne Halper? You're very humble, kind of. Most of the time you're very humble. You're very good at saying that you screwed up on something. I am too. I think that's why I admire you and love you so much. I can't stand it when you're looking at somebody like you really f'd up, and then they just are like finding every excuse in the book. Like, just say that you screwed up. Like, you're really good. It's like, who cares? Moving on. Cause you've got great confidence. There's so many things that I would say about you, like, that I've learned from you. What you just said is huge about just, you've got 2 ears and 1 mouth, and that seems to be the ongoing theme of all of my podcasts and LA Tribune. Everybody that's getting on that I'm talking with or interviewing says that, and they're all great people, and there's got to be something to it. And what's interesting is you said that was 19 what? Like, that was a few years ago, and it's the same, you know, reigning topic. The thing that's to do is to just shut up and and listen. It's such great advice, but that's something that I've learned from you. Even I study you when we go out to dinners and whatnot. Like a lot of times, yes, you run your mouth with some funny stuff and then you sit back, you observe and you listen. And I've done the same. So what's something that you've learned from William Lee Golden?
Well, let me, if I may.
Yes.
Before I answer that, because let's also, let's reflect back on what my experience is or what has made me. Middle class, Jewish, New York City. My undergraduate degree was in psychology and communications and a law degree. Okay. So there's a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Plus, I know how to read music. I know how to transpose. I know how to play instruments, all that kind of stuff. So, and I'm a fan. So I don't necessarily want to say what I learned from William Lee as much as what I learned from dealing with artists. Because it's just impossible to say I just picked this up just from William Lee personally. But, you know, there are some things from him. Number one. Patience. It's not your show and not your agenda. Your artist, your client, your relationship has their unique way of expressing themselves and getting their thoughts out. You cannot rush that. You cannot control that. You have to go with it. There are ways you can guide that. There are ways you can facilitate getting to the bottom line and getting your point across, but you have to be patient and allow your partner, your client, if you will, to say what they want to say. Number two, well, with William Lee, as much as with anybody, because we've been together almost 40 years, don't take yourself too seriously. Have fun. Enjoy what you're doing. Realize that your poop smells just like the next person. You're no better than anybody else. William Lee is one of those extremely unique individuals who places himself behind you. What I mean is during the weeks I would come to Nashville for a week at a time, I would live at his house in Hendersonville. And he would give me his master bedroom to sleep in his bed, and he would go down and sleep in one of the guest bedrooms. That's how kind and generous he was. Always put somebody else. He always put me before him. I wasn't taking advantage. I don't mean it that way. But you got to understand that, you know, we're at the end of the day, we're all equal and we're all people. Patience, humility, don't take yourself too seriously. Admit your mistakes. Say you don't know all the answers. Humble. Laughter is just a big part of it. Laughter is such a big part of it. And all of that comes full circle to the start of this conversation of loyalty. Mm-hmm. I was there when William Lee Golden was asked to leave the Oak Ridge Boys for a decade. Did that mean that I thought that I should go with somebody else because there was a better chance of me making money? No, of course not. My loyalty runs to the person. My loyalty runs to you. Whatever you do, do you have any doubts that I'm going to be there for you if you called me up and said I have this? I've never said no to you on anything. You either have the relationship and you're completely loyal to them or you're not. So, William Lee, the artist I worked with, you know, John and Paul said it perfectly. The love you take is equal to the love you make. What you give in loyalty is what you get back. What you give in respect and trust is what you get back. It's a two-way street. And if you set the tone and you're at the lead of that, baby, it comes back pretty quickly. Or you can figure out, this is a relationship that doesn't work for me. And there have been relationships that haven't worked for me. Of course there have been. I have fired clients over the years. I have been fired too. A lot less than I have fired people. But I just don't need that. It either clicks like a marriage or it doesn't. So, yeah, I think the major thing is patience, is really patience and respect.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I would have not, I guess I was looking for more little nuggets and tidbits. I wouldn't have guessed that, but.
It's simple. It's so freaking simple.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not better than you. I may know other things. Doesn't make me, you have a world of experiences that are different and unique, and you know more about certain things than I know. That's why the things that you rely upon me for are things that you need help with. And that's great. No one to ask for help. You can't do it alone.
No, that's another
one. None of us can.
I want to know if I just say, and you can say whatever you want to say, like if I just say Grace Jones, what comes to mind? What can we talk about? What can we possibly talk about that you can talk about? Like
Grace Jones is the most extreme example of somebody who anybody that I have dealt with one-on-one is true, honest, sincere. I know who they are. Grace was just one of those people where if there's more than one person in the room, it's showtime. So I knew when I wasn't going to be able to get stuff done. So it was no big deal with anybody else around. But one-on-one, dealing with people like Grace or William Lee, everyone's marvelous. William Lee is what you get. Here's a guy who's no different with one person than with 500 people.
Nice.
Exactly the same. People like that are far and few between. William Lee is the gold standard for being real and being a human and being compassionate and caring. I'm not saying Grace wasn't, but I'm just saying it also, there was a show. It was just a little different, but a lovely, lovely person.
What about Garth Brooks? Because, I mean, he's had a long... I wonder, like, if he knew... And I know a lot about, just because I'm friends, you know, with his daughter and everything. So,
yeah.
Like, was he the same when you first got there as to... Because you said you were there for a long time when he left? Or, I mean, did he grow or did he completely change? Or I look back at... when I first got signed, and I'm a completely different person than I am now, like just night and day. I mean, I screwed up so many things and I've fallen on my face. I've been humbled where he didn't. He started out with humble beginnings, but then rocketed. And then it just seemed like it just grew and grew and grew. It didn't seem like, and I didn't, and then pivot, stay there for a second. I didn't know William Lee wasn't in the Oak Ridge Boys for
10 years. He was. Respectfully asked to leave the group for 10 years. So they parted ways for 10 years.
I mean, I didn't know that. I'll have to look up when we get off the line, you know, what happened and everything like that. But that's interesting. So that's not the case with Garth Brooks. Was he the same when he first got there, when you first started dealing with? Did things change? Did his personality change?
Let's remember that in my role at the record company, I was the lawyer. So I was doing deals.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was not involved with promotion or marketing or single selection or creative stuff in any way, shape, or form. Anything I am not competent or qualified or comfortable talking about that.
Sure.
Okay. Because that's not my world.
Yeah.
When it came down to business and dealing with Garth, and I negotiated 4 or 5 contracts where he and his manager and his lawyer and his business manager would be in the room with me. It was nothing short of a pleasant experience. It was respectful. To this day, if we run into each other, and it's been 4 or 5 years since the last time I saw him.
Sure.
He will come over to me to give me a hug.
Nice.
It's not about that. Garth has always been... I'm on Team Garth. He's always been nothing but warm and genuine and real to me. Do we all have our own, the word is mishigas, our own craziness, our own idiosyncrasies, our own ways of doing things?
Any.
Of course we do. Of course we do. That's not for me to comment on or to be affected by.
Oh, sure. I just, like, he seemed like he was always kind of solid in the same and full speed ahead. And I admire that, you know, like, I wonder how people get, I'm pretty close to that, but I have my days and my moments, and he's just somebody that it looks like he just was just like, I'm focused and I'm tunnel and I'm driven. And I want to learn from that.
There were times where there were, I don't know what the right word is. There were respectful disagreements, perhaps, between Garth and promotion or marketing or this or that. As there always are. As there always are going to be. Because Garth, A, he has a degree in marketing. And he knows what he wants. And he's very good at it.
Okay, I didn't know that he had a degree in marketing. Then that helps me. That makes a little sense. And then that you want to go out and research things more. When you said that you did deals.
Yeah.
So did you ever, working at that label, were you brought deals, or did you ever have to like go out and negotiate the deals on your own and bring them to the artist or to the label? You know, it was like cold calling. Did you ever have to do that? Or did you ever bring in something that was just like amazing that you did on your own and didn't have to, it was just all Wayne. I don't know the side of you.
The real true answer is no.
Okay.
Between at Capitol Records and at DreamWorks, the way that labels were organized back in the 90s and early 2000s were the head of the labels were the creative guys.
Oh, yeah.
So at DreamWorks, it was James Stroud. At Capitol, it was Jimmy Bowen. Jimmy Bowen, who was my mentor, my god, won a Grammy for producing Frank Sinatra, Strangers in the Night.
What?
Yeah, sold over 300 million records. I take a bullet for that. I consider myself still on his payroll.
Really?
The way that it worked is with Bowen, I was told, here's who we're signing. And that's all that I was told. The first contract I did for Jimmy Bowen, which was with Mandy Barnett, was a 70-page contract. We spent 3 hours. The next contract, I don't remember who it was, we spent an hour and a half. The next contract, we spent 45 minutes.
Yeah, I see the pattern.
From that point forward, I knew, Jimmy, here are the 7 points I need you to confirm which way I want to go, because I had established the trust from him to know how to do everything else. So I had nothing else. You know, it was wonderful at that point. And with Capitol, we did over 250, 300 contracts in the 5-6 year period.
You wow me when I give you something and you redline it and send it back. And I'm just like, how does this guy even know what he's looking for? Or it just looks like literally, I would say Greek, but it, like Asian, right? Hiragana, katakana, kanji. I can't read any of that stuff. I don't even see the stuff that you see.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Experience.
And this is a leading question because I know the answer. When I do my comments and my red lines, have you ever felt, gee, Wayne is overextending, Wayne's jeopardizing this deal? Or exactly. Because the one thing that I learned, and the most important thing, another important thing is, a deal has to be fair, and neither side is going to get everything they want.
I get that. I think on the artist end of it, though, I'm more like, you know, just because, and I'll give you a prime example. Like, there's so many artists that will just go play in Nashville for free. Or for tips. And what that does is it just conditions it for the venues and that culture that when I go in, I kind of have to tiptoe on asking for anything. I'm getting better at it, but like today we had a booking and it would have been really easy for me just to lowball it so that I know we got booked. And there was just something that maybe I'm just getting older and I'm just tired of just lowballing everything, or I know that I'm not going to get everything that I want. It's like I'm conditioned by other musicians to be like that. Like, that's where that comes from. It's just like, we're all like these pathetic little tenants with the landlord that we don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to complain about anything. So it's like, I know that I'm not going to get everything that I want. Like, that's never a problem for me. I think maybe it is for, you did such a good job on our last contract though, because I remember you were saying like, me and you just decided, you know, like, just let it go. Like, can't have everything. And I don't know. I'm cool with that. And one thing that I was going to say is how different it is now when I know a lot of your clients. I've shot photos for a lot of your clients, and it's like, you do go out, and, you know, one that we met, that I met through you, you know, you were going out, not like when you were at the label and they would just bring it. That's why I was asking, because now it's so different. Now you go out and hustle up this book deal or this, that, or you're doing stuff with, you know, for your cybercrime client. Yeah. You know, like, you really go, like, so I don't know. I just was wondering if, like, you did you just, I guess, learn all that when you were there, or is that something that you wanted to do but didn't? Why would you want to do that? Cold calling is so hard. Like, how did you get good at all of that stuff? Because I know you're getting really good deals for people, and it's like, again, it must be through your relationships and things like that.
It's networking, it's relationships, it's not going in with the arrogance of, I have something that you need. If you don't give me what I want, your world's going to implode and you're going to look like a fool. You go into it saying, I have something to propose to you. We can figure out a win-win situation. I'll give you an example, and I'll talk in general terms. Yesterday, I work with a company that does marketing for streaming, the streaming marketing. And I called up one of the major, I talked to one of the heads of the major labels yesterday. And I said, I got this guy, here's what we'd like to do, but we're not going to charge you a dime. In fact, why don't you give me about 10 albums that are underperforming, that you don't feel that are doing very well, from the 1980s, the 1990s. And you know what? I won't make a dime unless I make you more money than you're currently making. So I'm not going to charge you anything, and I'll only get paid if I succeed and increase what you're earning right now. How much more fair can you get than that?
Lots.
Right? But the bottom line is being fair. The bottom line is, I have lost clients who've wanted me to negotiate major record deals, who want $100,000 advances and this and that and jet planes and what have you. And my first words out of my mouth are, what would you rather have? $100,000 in your pocket, or let's say $25,000 in your pocket, but a commitment from the record company to spend $200,000 on marketing, right? A commitment to actually spend money on furthering your career. And when the client says, oh no, I want the $100,000 in my pocket, I say, well, then you really don't get it, because that you're in it for the sprint. This is a marathon. And the marathon says you got to play those steps. You got to set it up for the long-term success. I'd like $100,000 too right now. But if the label's not going to commit to spend money on radio play or promotion or advertisements, what's the point? It's all about awareness. What's good music? Good music is what we tell you is good, what you're aware of. So wouldn't you have $25,000? You're going to be able to live off of that. We'll get you a publishing deal. You'll make a little bit more. But the label is going to spend $200,000 on getting you in front of people? No, I want the money. Goodbye. I'm not the right guy for you.
And I remember a contract that you did for TLC's Cheapskates with me. And I remember dealing with them, and I knew that I wasn't like the only game in town. I knew there was a lot of different, I knew that it was just one segment of a show. Like, I was one component of it. The whole show wasn't mine, and I was using that as leverage, because I got to be friends, like the clipboard people. I knew what the budget was, and it wasn't a lot. And so every idea that I kindly and humbly proposed, that they were like, oh, that's interesting. I just went on my own. Yeah. I didn't spend a lot of money, but I went out on my own and got all the stuff. And I started laying it out, taking pictures of it and saying, what about this? Well, I was doing their work for them, but I would have much rather the money that they had in that pot go to exactly that. And like a lot of the producers were just like, they were amazed by the hustle. And I was like, okay, they're going for that idea. Very much like in wrestling, they're just like, anything went, Wayne. If I came up with it and said, all right, I've got this black wig and I've got this geisha outfit and this and that. Yeah, do it. Cause you did the work and then you're just there, you know, and I really saw during that production. And then at the very end, they did kick me a few more dollars. They did cover my stuff. The producers here and there, they took care of me. And I just think if you, I would have a hard time because a lot of people I know are the $100,000, just give it to me now. And they're not thinking long term. They're not thinking for the marathon. And I think if I was to sum up like what's going on right now in entertainment or in any, you know, artistic business, it's just like you gotta rethink the way that your brain is functioning, because it's not, this isn't Motley Crue, you know, destroying hotels and lighting the room on fire. And like, you're just lucky if you even get a freaking hotel and deal. Usually you have to come up with your own travel. So again, being grateful and humility, I would have never thought that the podcast would have went that direction with all the life lessons that you learn. But that's what happens when you book somebody that's not a dipshit. So I appreciate
it. It's almost like, and I say this a lot to artists, especially new ones with their first album, you got to assume that what you're doing today is not going to be what's going to be the end game that makes you the money. This podcast, this stuff you're doing, Goldie, are brilliant ways of marketing, getting your name out there, getting exposure. You ain't going to get rich on this.
No.
You ain't going to survive on this.
No.
This is not your bread and butter.
But how do people not see that? Like, you know, and the thing is about like, you know, I mean, Vince, if you're watching, you know, Vince takes care of us and he's great, but I'm not doing it for that. Like the biggest, I interviewed some people to help them the other day, two people. One person was asking really great questions. And the other person, Wayne, they were just like, oh, well, it seems like this is a lot of work. And are you burnt out on podcasts and Patreon? And I mean, I was just like, girl, you're going to last like 3 months tops and you're going to burn out. And it's like, this is ladies and gentlemen, this is our 100th show. So this is almost two consecutive years. Wayne, I haven't missed one. This is the beauty of this, not the money that you're going to make from podcasting, but I have not missed one show in 2 years. And then before that, I was on Vince's another 2.5 years on Bucket Full of Chicken Neck. So that's almost 5 years where every week I have made it my goal to find an interesting, entertaining, and educational guest. And that is really hard, but that sharpens my tool set for hustle. And then that leads into this, and that extends into this, and that's how it, and you gotta think like every, and for the most part, in 5.5 years, I think one person has even insinuated like, where's my payment? Otherwise, it's just like it's an unwritten rule. Like, oh, well, thank you. You're going to talk about your life and I'm going to ask you questions and you're going to speak and I'm going to, it's just like, I think a lot of it has to do with the wrestling business or the music business. Like there is a humility in our business because if you are successful talking like, you know, William Lee Golden, like you are humble. And I think more businesses should adapt that model. Just take it down a little bit notch. And like you said, don't take yourself so seriously. I don't take myself seriously at all. Like I don't think I'm a joke, but like no. I'm serious about my business. But like, I mean, I just let things fly. You know, you have to. So that's so interesting about the 100,000 versus the 25. Cause I
have it happened so many times. I can't tell you where I have it. And it's okay. It's just not the way I like to do business, and not that it's certainly not what I think is in the best interest long term for success. So,
and you can always ask the question, like, what do you think that I should do? And just like, you know, I'm interested in your opinion, or, and then get the opinion and then, you know, stew on it. Sometimes I get some opinions where I'm just like, it's not that I didn't want to hear that. It's just like, I think maybe they don't have enough knowledge on it. But if I'm coming to talk to you, it's because you have that knowledge and, you know,
well, you are an extreme positive example of somebody who knows how to go down 5, 6, 7 different channels and different lanes, manage them at the same time, and realize that they all complement each other. And
that's
one.
That's a hard one.
I know. But and they do.
I remember 10, 15 years ago, you were sitting in the studio and a bunch of people were saying, you know, oh, she's not focused or this or that. And you said, I know exactly what Goldie's going to say. She's going to come in and tell us all to go fuck ourselves. You know, I mean, that's been at the end of the podcast. I usually curse a little bit more then, but, and cause you're right. Cause I would. And it's like, I really do look at everything. I don't know who taught me to look at things like a chess game, but like, you know, now when I do this podcast, it usually trickles into something else. And like, you know, this week my dad was on the podcast and we were talking because he's a parole officer. He dealt with, you know, power rapists and pedophiles. And, you know, this was his business and this was all I heard about growing up. And we did a really morbid, macabre, you know, podcast on inside the mind of a rapist because Valentine's is coming up for me and us and people and women and single people. And I think it's really important that people that are a little down in the dumps, like start thinking like that day specifically more rapes occur on that day because chicks are just out looking for love in all the wrong places. And I'm like, you guys wake up, be aware. And so, you know, my dad just gets on there and just goes for it. I'm just like, oh God, he's so freaking intense. And he just like, well, if you're getting raped and you're going to get killed, just, you know, just take it. And I'm like, just take it. He's like, well, you want to get killed? And I'm like, all right. Okay. I get your point. But like, he's so like, this was his business. And then did a great article in Los Angeles Tribune about that. Like it all links together. And then I'm talking on my Amazon about all the different defense tools that you can buy. Like instead of giving your girl chocolates and making her ass maybe fatter than it needs to be, get her something if she can't carry or isn't comfortable with a gun. Like here's some pepper spray or here's some mace. Or so you are great with me at, you said that with artists, like you have all this training and you are an artist yourself. You're just good at leading people down the right way and managing. That's so important.
At the end of the day, we're all artists. We just express ourselves differently. I express it maybe in my writing and the way I draft and do all of those kind of things.
Your emails are very artistic.
Yeah, I try to be. Now, the real problem now as a 67-year-old is I had two great points I want to make and I forgot them. So, damn it.
Wait, are you 67?
Yeah.
No!
Yeah.
I thought you just turned 60.
Fuck, that would be nice. Oh, I'm sorry, fans. Oh, I know what it was. The other day, I get a call from a referral. Somebody says, oh, will you talk to so-and-so to see if you could help them? But, hi, Wayne Halpern. Hi, this is so-and-so. Joe Blow referred me. How much do you charge? I said, I don't think we're right for each other. No. Money is the absolute last thing that's important in any relationship. If we don't connect, what's the point? The way I operate it.
I probably didn't want to insult you or I would have asked the same thing.
I don't know. Maybe that's just me being like, because I'm not in, sure, we're all in it for money. But you know what? Ease into it.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Figure out at least, can I stand even talking to this guy? I'm not a machine. I'm not a piece of meat. You know what I mean by that. It's like, just because I may have this degree or have done this stuff, it doesn't mean that we're going to be able to work together if the price is right. We have to connect as human beings. And that's what's important. That's more important than anything else. Do we connect? That's, you know, and that's what I need. And I'm not going to work with you until I know that we connect. And I'll tell you, I'll say, there's no clock. You're not being charged a dime until we know that we're right for each other. I don't care. I don't care if I did all the work and that I advised you and told you what you wanted to know. I'm not going to charge you because we haven't agreed on that. And we're still trying to figure out as human beings, you know, we're on a blind date. We're on a blind date. So let's get to first base. And I don't mean first base in that sense, at least into the batter's box. So, you know, it's like everything is like bam, 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 bam. No, that's not how it works, folks. This is relationship and networking and, you know, feelings and empathy. And it's more on that side than it is just the black and white of doing business.
Amazing podcast by the world-renowned something explanatory helper.
Yeah,
I would have never guessed it went this way, but as always, we just let things kind of fly and go the way that they do. I've got my questions, and I've asked some of them, and then we just let the conversation organically go wherever it is. If we have to end it on a note, what would you end it on? If you get a crazy story, something that the supporters would enjoy, a little nugget for the people that wait for the very, very end. Is there some? I usually end on podcasts that I do with the Valdosta, Georgia story. You all know it, love it well, with the so-called called man that was approaching the stage as I crouched down and was singing to everybody. And the man was backing up to the stage, and I just saw the back of his head. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't the back of his head. It was the front, and it was a woman, and she opened her hair. She was walking back like Cousin It at me, walking forward, and she grabbed my ankles and bit down on my vagina. And now I've got teeth marks there, and I had to get a tetanus shot. And this is my, you know, this is my ending story about what's the craziest thing that's ever happened at a show. And I have yet to have anything top it, and I hope that it doesn't, because that's a story that I got to explain to anybody that I'm intimate with, and it's a little odd because it really doesn't make any sense. But I will tell you, we did do a wedding performance, and I met a man who drove up from, drumroll please, Valdosta, Georgia, where he is a firefighter, did some EMT work. When I told him that I had performed at, he said, wait, let me guess. Rock and Rodeo. I said, how did you know? He said the craziest story that he had was years and years and years ago of this young girl getting her coos bitten and having to be taken in the ambulance to the emergency room because somebody locked down on her junk. And I was like, oh my God, is that you? And that's, you know, his craziest story and mine. And we met at this wedding, and that's my craziest story. So I hope that doesn't happen to anybody that you know, let alone, can you imagine that?
No.
Like, is seriously, like, what are you on? Not something nice or loving, like just a lockdown, like through the flesh, blood done. That's my story. Do you have anything? I don't know. It doesn't have to be that bad, but like, what do you have, Wayne?
You know, the problem is, because of being an attorney for people, the stories I can tell like that are going to have to be published after I die in my book. Okay.
Fair.
So it's hard for me to, but I have some doozies.
I hope you are writing that book that gets going.
There's the story of the 2 weeks where one of my artists kidnapped me so that we traveled the country to make sure that his fiance at the time could not find him. And we went from Dallas to Taos to Seattle to Chicago to New York to Miami, and just went from hotel to hotel over a 2 week period.
You were really kidnapped.
It was great. But you know, it was wild and crazy times. I have stories of being at Studio 54 in the early 80s with Grace.
Okay. I need a Studio 54.
No. It is what you think. I mean, it's exactly what you would imagine. You know, the best story, let's put it this way. I gotta leave it on this note because of all the stuff I've done in my career, and that's how I describe it. I've done stuff. You don't see any gold albums on my walls. There's nothing that denotes any of that kind of success. I have a couple of autographed pictures here or there. I got a picture off the side of the stage of Garth on the stage and me in the first row. And Garth writes, I recognize Wayne, but who's that fat dude on stage with the guitar? Stuff like that's nice. But the thing that means the most to me was in 2004, I was appointed, elected, nominated, anointed Nashville Father of the Year. So at the end of the day, you know, been married to my wife for 35 years. Just don't even go with the comments. Yes, yeah, she's an angel. She's a saint. I know. Family is important. Having a network of support is important. I'd love to give you some crazy stuff.
Ah, that's beautiful.
But, you know, okay, I'll say this. Whenever I get involved with a new artist and there's an engagement letter, there is a paragraph that says, when you go out on your stadium tour, I get my own tour bus with my own driver. So that's my goal in life, is to be on a major 6-month tour around America with an artist and have my own tour bus and live.
Oh God, you'd hate that. You'd want to
no.
be with your people.
No. My wife would be with me. Are you kidding?
Say that. Okay.
I don't know. A tour bus with a king size bed and a shower and the Wi-Fi and the satellite TV and a driver. Oh, that's heaven. I've been on tour, I've been very lucky. To surround myself with nice people. And wow. You're amongst that group too. So I look forward to the check you're going to send me for this podcast arriving. So I thank you for that. Yeah, right.
And to quote my late mother, wherever she is floating around, you make your own luck. That was my thing that she said. Like, you got to remember that. Like, me may look at it as luck, but somebody's hustling pretty hard to make that luck happen.
I don't think I have to say it. I hope it goes without saying how much I adore you. What are we even together? 10 years? 12 years? I don't even know how long we've been working.
Much longer than that, because I got here with wrestling in 2002, and it was very short after that I know I must have met you through EB, right?
Yeah, okay. We've been 2005, 4 or 5 or 6 around.
Or like maybe 2004.
Yeah.
So 2004, 2014.
You know, and you've experienced that you're on that list of people I would take a bullet for.
You already know. We already talked about some things that happened this year, and I just said you need me to go, whatever, and I would have been there. And
I know.
I mean,
that's what it's about: relationships, networking, trust, empathy, honesty, communication.
And then, you know, not to bring up other things, we'll know what I'm talking about. But when other people get in there that are ass wipes and try and do everything they can to wedge in things that they know are good. Like I got no time for that at all, because at the end of the day, all you really have is your word and your family, your faith and your friendships. So when people get in the way of that stuff or try to mess with it, I get real, real protective. My dad is like that too. Very protective of friends and family. Like you don't mess. Like it's a huge responsibility, gift, and you just like blood or friends to my dad, or just that's the everything to him. So,
you know, better than anybody right there. That's my office. That's my assistant. Everybody has my cell phone. I'm available 24/7. And that's what I deliver is access. And that's why I don't need 300 clients. I got 15, 20 people I work with. That keeps me satisfied because I underpromise. That's the other key. Underpromise and overdeliver. Underpromise and overdeliver. Always do that.
No, these are great. Wayne, thank you for staying a few more minutes than I said. I think I said for 45 minutes. It's been an hour exactly. Realm Network, thanks for having us. Russo's Brand, thank you to all of the people that write in and let us know that these podcasts help you through your day. I couldn't think of anything that I would love more for these to do than to get you through some of those jobs that I know we've got a lot of truck drivers out there. I know we've got a lot of people in factories. I know that we've got some people that are laid up at home and they can't get out in the UK and in Canada and New Zealand and Australia. And just thank you. So at the end, we always do a little golf clap for the people. Come on. Let me see your name. Thanks everybody. Goldie's Closet episode 100 with our very, very special guest, Mr. Wayne Helper. Thank you, Wayne.
Love you, Goldie.
You know the song. Well, let's make it about the men this Valentine's Day. You know I'm on Cameo, and you know how much I love to do custom shout-outs and greetings. But this Valentine's Day, if you're single or if you're alone or if you're just a little tweaked out with the COVID, let's flip the switch. Now, I'm taking this from Francine, Extreme Francine, with her bikini cameos. Francine, thank you for the idea. I'm stealing it blatantly. But let's do a little flip. I would love you to book a cameo. Don't use the Apple app, by the way. Just book it directly from the link, cameo.com/Goldilocks. I'll list it. Take it from there. I want you to write a custom script, like a love letter to yourself. I want you to tell me all of the things that you love about yourself. Okay? Bros, write it down. And I want to deliver it back to you in the bikini of your choice. Valentine's, whatever color, I've got them all. Because I like swimsuits and I like the beach, I like summertime, so I think it's pretty badass. Thanks, Francine. It's a great idea. Love letter to yourself. Book one with me. Let me deliver it. Signed, sealed, delivered. You know the gimmick. I want to brighten your day and make you smile. Check it out. Cameo.com/, I think it's just Goldilocks. Find it. It's not hard. Love ya. Mwah.